Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, we are still in Season 3, the 31st episode overall, The Phoenix Saga, Part 3, Cry of the Banshee. Sonia, what do you think of this episode?
I really liked this episode. I actually wasn't ready for it to end when it ended, and kind of wanted to watch Part 4 right away, but, you know, we're doing something here.
Sadly, this is the last episode of the X-Men Task Podcast.
No!
I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
no, we will carry on. This is a great episode, dare I say a classic. It highlights a lot of what the show does best, which is take a classic comic book and reimagine it for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
A similar major comic happens in the, you know, in the Uncanny X-Men universe, where they travel to Ireland and they confront the Juggernaut and this character we're going to meet named Black Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Although in the comic, the team was a little different. There was Colossus and Nightcrawler, and Banshee was not a guest star. He was actually an X-Man.
Mm.
So, and then the circumstances of what happens in the episode are quite different than the comic. But they try to, in the animated series here, capture a lot of the elements that were interesting of that comic and spice it up for the ongoing Phoenix Saga that mm-hmm. was also playing out at the time in the comic.
Right.
Anyway, this episode begins with where we left off in the last episode, where you want to give a brief recap, or shall I?
Go for it.
So basically, Professor X has retreated to Muir Island to get some rest and recuperation after his evil dark side emerged from his subconscious. He's having been contacted by Lilandra, the space alien, through the cosmos, and it's really messing with his mind for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And but it turns out Lilandra is real, and she appears in the professor's like private quarters. And she's this real sexy alien princess woman from another galaxy, an adjacent galaxy, apparently. And she tells Professor X they have a bond deeper than love,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. And at that moment, the Juggernaut bursts in, of all people, to capture Lilandra. So it sort of picks up right before that happens, where Sean Cassidy, otherwise known as Banshee, and Moira McTaggart, and they're lovers.
Right. They're standing on like a cliff hillside in Scotland, where Muir Island is supposed to be.
The fictional Muir Island.
Right, okay.
I don't believe it's real.
And
another one of those clever Marvel fictional places that seem like it could be real.
Yeah.
Like Latveria, where Doctor Doom lives.
Or Genosha.
Or Genosha, right. Yeah, very like well-named like minor little provinces or islands in the X-Men universe that are, you know, if you're a little kid reading about them, you wouldn't really know if they're real or not.
Yeah.
Very clever storytelling.
Nice details.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, so Moira and Banshee are having a moment talking about, you know, Professor X being there and how maybe he's a little bit miffed because he has this romantic past with Moira.
Right. But then they decide to have a slobbering makeout session. When there's this, like, magical light beaming in and out of the professor's quarters, they're kind of oblivious to it at first, which we mentioned on the last episode and we thought was kind of funny. But here we see it was just a delayed reaction time.
Right.
They were
busy, you know.
That's right. They're really tying their tongues together. But here, there's a delayed reaction time. Yeah, that's gross. Delayed reaction time, they hear an explosion or something, and then they start running over there. And at first, Moira doesn't want Sean to come, because she thinks Professor X's dark side has been unleashed again, and that Banshee's presence will only infuriate him, because she had a past fling with Professor X.
Mm-hmm.
But Sean sort of vows to her, you know, whatever you're going to face, I'm going to face too. That's because I love you, Moira. Something. You're going to hear a lot of bad Scottish accents, I think, in this episode. So, you know, they're racing to help. But in the meantime, the Juggernaut has arrived, and he's sort of stomping around. And he's there to kidnap Lilandra for some reason. And Professor X...
For the cash prize.
Right. Well, yeah, we don't know about that just yet. But, yeah, essentially for money. And Professor X tells Lilandra to shoot at his helmet to get his helmet off, because that's where he's vulnerable. So she does. She has, like, a little Star Trek phaser.
She doesn't have powers, does she?
She does. She's got mental powers, like Professor X.
Have we seen that?
Yeah. Well,
oh, not... well, I guess she, like, telepathically links to
him. Yeah, we haven't, like, known how she's really done that just yet. Okay. But in this episode, they make it clear that she's a telepath.
Right.
So, yeah, so she has, like, a little phaser in her hand, and she starts shooting the she starts shooting Juggernaut's helmet off, and it works. And the Professor X is like, all right, finally, he can get to business, and he starts with his mind powers.
Yeah.
So now you think with a mind power as great as Professor X, he would tell the Juggernaut to instantly just, you know, like, pass out, like, or just run away, mm-hmm. like, something. But instead, he, like, begins with a morality lesson. He's like, Juggernaut, you shall feel the pain you've caused across your entire life.
Right. He's really guilting him, and he's, like, giving him all these mental projections of all the bad stuff that he's done.
Yeah, his a brief summary of Juggernaut's backstory, which we haven't, like, quite yet seen. They gave us a hint of it when his first appearance, that, you know, he's Professor X's half-brother. I don't remember if they're half-brothers in the comics. I can't remember if they're step-brothers. I don't know if they're directly related. Let's just say they're half-brothers. Someone in the Facebook group can confirm. But, yeah, it's one of the weirdest familial relationships in the entire Marvel universe, that Professor X and Juggernaut are, like, brothers or half-brothers, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Because Juggernaut's such a big, dumb, lumbering oaf, and his entire motivation for hating the Professor is that he's just been jealous of him. Like, if you read the Origin of Juggernaut comic from the 60s, it's really funny. Like, they show them being raised together, and the Professor, like, you know, he's like the perfect golden boy child because he's really smart. He gets straight A's. He's winning, like, academic awards. He's also really good at, like, sports, like track, mm-hmm. because he can tell when other runners are getting tired. He knows when to kick his sprint in and stuff. And the Juggernaut, his name is Kane Marco. Mm-hmm. He's just stewing, like, this classic, like, 1960s bully boy, the way whoever drew him, I'm assuming Jack Kirby, mm-hmm. in one of those early issues, you know, just like one of those, like, classic pug-faced goons,
yeah.
that he was really good at drawing, just stewing in the background, really hating the Professor. So that's their entire, like, hatred. Mm-hmm. But it's become this, like, murderous hatred. Like, this Kane guy really hates the Professor. And then, I mean, like, just to... This is just my half-baked, like, history of Juggernaut here. Like, I think in the comics, Juggernaut, or Kane Marco, goes... He's fighting in Korea in the Korean War, and he stumbles in some cave and discovers this thing called, like, the Gem of Sidorak, or the... some Crystal of Sidorak, I believe. I might be mispronouncing that or remembering it wrong. Again, like I said, this is the half-baked history.
Okay.
And it turns him into the Juggernaut, and that's when he decides to seek his revenge and go to a life of crime.
Hmm.
And, you know, as a Juggernaut, he's, like, basically invincible. He's super invulnerably strong. I don't even think he has to breathe. Like, you can throw him in water. He can just, like, he doesn't have to breathe underwater. I don't think he has to eat or anything.
Hmm.
I could be wrong about a few of those details. But he's, like, he's like a magical force. And he's not a mutant either. He's just got, like, magical powers.
Okay.
Right. So, anyway, that's the story of the Juggernaut. And so, yeah, and Professor X is trying to guilt trip him instead of just, like, knocking him out with his brain powers.
Yeah, which doesn't really make sense.
No, it makes no sense.
But it's, like, working, kind of, because he's going a little crazy,
yeah.
and he delivers that classic line, like, get out of my head, which, like, happens in almost every one of these sequences yeah. where there's mind control tactics being used.
Well, the last time I feel like we've seen the Professor try this stunt, it was against Magneto in one of the earliest episodes, and he does the same thing. He pulls mm-hmm. the guilt trip, psychic beam on Magneto,
yeah.
where he makes Magneto remember his childhood, that he was in the Holocaust or something.
Yeah.
And that caused Magneto to fly away.
Right.
So I guess Professor X is just thinking that it's like he wants to teach the Juggernaut a lesson. Mm-hmm. Like, not just, he doesn't want to just beat him. He wants him to realize that he's a bad guy and he needs to reform himself.
Right. Because, well, that makes sense. He's taking, like, a psychological standpoint.
But not always not the best tactic here.
Not the best tactic, but he's trying to prevent himself from being in this situation again in the future, I think is the idea behind it.
Right. Yeah, you're right. He's trying to, like, win the war, not just the battle.
Exactly.
Which is kind of silly. But I think mainly this was done for the purposes of so we got to see a bit of the Juggernaut's backstory.
Of course, yeah.
Right, yeah. But anyway, beyond that, it looks like Professor X is going to win, despite his weird approach to the situation. But then out of the corner of the room, Black Tom appears and shoots Professor X with his magical shillelagh thing. So,
how did you know the word shillelagh?
What? So basically, this Black Tom guy, he's another character from the original comic that this is based on. He is related to Banshee. I believe in this, and this is interesting that it like sort of parallels what's going on with Professor X and Juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
It's another like weird familial relationship,
right?
Like where one guy's a hero and one's a villain. In this case, he's related to Banshee.
In the cartoon, they say that they're brothers,
right? And they call Black Tom a little brother, which makes very little sense because
right.
Black Tom is
has, like gray hair.
He's like looks old, and Banshee looks like a young, you know, virile man.
Yeah.
So, but in this episode, yeah, Black Tom is presented as the little brother of Banshee. But in the comics, I believe that they're cousins, which makes more sense.
Hmm.
And we'll talk a little bit more of that later. So anyway, Black Tom, he shoots the Professor X with his wooden shillelagh. Like, this purple beam comes out. And I never, like knew exactly what Black Tom's power was. He's kind of a minor villain in the overall scheme of things in the X-Men world.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked it up. Before I did a little bit of research before this episode started, and it turns out he can use wood as a medium to shoot like heat beams at people.
Hmm.
So that's a really interesting,
what a specific power.
I know. And he likes to use his wooden shillelagh as it's said on Wikipedia.
Do they use that word in the comics?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember.
Okay.
Probably not in his origin episode.
It's a stick. It's comic. Just a really big stick.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So why is it a shillelagh?
Because he's from Scotland and Scottish things are happening.
All right.
Scottish things are happening, Sonia.
Fine.
And, you know, Black Tom is a ridiculous character. He's another one of these, like super masculine fit guys, like Cyclops, where he's just bulging with muscles, inexplicably wearing, like, a tight purple spandex outfit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what's going on with Black Tom.
When you have magical powers, these are the things that you have to do.
I guess, yeah, you acquire some spandex right away.
That's right.
In the most fabulous colors. So Professor X is knocked out, and he's like, come on, Juggernaut, we have to get out of here. Just grab the princess and go. That's what our deal is here. But Juggernaut's like, not before I get rid of my wretched half-brother. And he picks up Professor X. And again, instead of just, like, crushing Professor X's head, which I think would have been a fitting death for Professor X at the hands of Juggernaut, I'll take care of that stupid smarty brain head of yours, Squish. Yeah, he throws him out the window. And in classic supervillain mindset mode, Juggernaut doesn't check to see if the professor died.
Yeah, right.
He just walks out.
Tosses him out and
assumes he's dead.
Yeah.
So how convenient for Professor... Oh, and then Professor X is saved by Banshee, who comes flying in.
Right.
So Banshee, which we haven't talked about too much yet, really, is he can... And we all know what Banshee can do. He sort of screams really loudly, and that allows him to have supersonic flight somehow.
I thought it was that... It, like, bounces off the ground or the water or whatever's underneath him, and that
allows
lifts
it, like,
him up.
Yeah, I guess that's what's supposed to be going on. That's what they show in the movie.
Is that physics? Is that real?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
That might be the way it's done in the comics, too, but often you see Banshee just able to fly without...
Without screaming?
I don't know. I mean, he's always presumably screaming, but he can... But I feel like
flying without screaming is definitely better than flying with screaming.
That's true. But I feel like there's must be incidental scenes where he's flying kind of normally, like Storm, where he's not really... Or maybe he's hovering at times.
Hmm.
I don't know. Probably not. They're probably pretty consistent with it. But right, that's how he gets around. He has to scream. It's kind of like a crappier... It's flying, which is good. But it's a crappier version of Iceman's ice slide, because
mm-hmm.
Iceman doesn't fly, but he uses his fly to sort of soar through the air. His slide to soar through the air on his ice slide.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That's awesome.
But Banshee has to scream everywhere he wants to do something there.
Yeah,
it kind of sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Very annoying, right?
Yeah, really. You can't have like a stealthy entrance anywhere.
Right. Yeah. So, and at this point, Banshee and Moira don't know what has happened. They didn't see Juggernaut or Black Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And Professor X is trying to explain, but Moira just thinks Professor X is, like, lost it and crazy.
Yeah.
That he's had an episode.
She thinks it's hallucinations.
Right. And he says, you know, it's like, trust me, like, this woman Lalandra came. And she's like, how do you really know? Sort of, like, condescendingly putting...
Yeah, and he's like, because I love her.
Yeah. And then she looks really stunned.
Right.
Which, to me, is funny, because there's, like, in the past two episodes... This episode and the past one, there's been this weird thing where Moira... Like, Professor X and Moira are both playing this game where they're trying to one-up each other in terms of their love life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's, like, a rivalry happening for
yeah.
some reason.
They're ex-lovers, and they both, like... Like, Professor X thinks he's found this deeper love, like, and that Moira, his thing we had with Moira meant nothing. And Moira's kind of like, oh, you know, Professor X, he really loved me, but I had to break his heart, and now I've got this new greater relationship. And it just keeps coming at a head, and I find that kind of silly and funny to me.
Yeah. Well,
it's a little detail, and it fizzles out after that point.
I know. I just think it's funny that she is, like, shocked at that, because... Yeah. Like, is she thinking, like, oh my god, he's in love with somebody else and, like, you know, the rivalry thing is, like, kicked up? Or is she like, oh my god, this guy is absolutely hallucinating. There's no way that this is real.
But,
like,
that's what's so funny about it is that I think she wants to think he is hallucinating because she's sort of, she feels kind of, like, has a superior attitude, like, oh, well, he still really loves me. I'm his true love.
Uh-huh.
Even though she's moved on.
Right.
She's like, oh, I know how much he loved me.
Right.
He can never replace me.
That's the one-upmanship.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, Professor X has replaced her
right.
very quickly. Perhaps too quickly, because he's only met Lalandra for, like, 5 seconds.
And but it's deeper than love.
Right, they have a bond deeper than love.
So.
Which is funny to keep mentioning. anyway, cut to Jean. She's still in the hospital, recovering from saving everyone's life.
As the Phoenix.
Right, getting transformed to the Phoenix. And it's this point that Rogue finally appears. She's been missing the past two episodes.
You know what I noticed?
What?
That every time they mention... it in the show, they never say the Phoenix. They just say Phoenix. Like, she doesn't say, I am the Phoenix. She says, I am Phoenix.
Right, yeah.
It, like, sounds strange to me every time.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, it's, well, the Phoenix Force is an entity.
Yeah.
It's like this third party cosmic entity. So, and then it bonds with Jean Grey.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's like, maybe in the Phoenix's bonding with Jean Grey, it's like the compromise. Instead of saying, like, I have the Phoenix power or I am the Phoenix, it's saying I am Phoenix, like a merging of the two. Even though it's not like I am Jean Phoenix, that would be more equitable. You know what I'm trying to say?
Though? Or even Phoenix Jean.
Right, Phoenix Jean.
I would like that the best, I think.
Phoenix Jean.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, that's the way fans distinguish, you know, Jean Grey sometimes. They'll say, it's like, oh, when she's Phoenix Jean, you know, she's like this.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
Right. But, you know, you're right. I don't know.
But it's like the Queen of England doesn't walk around saying, I am Queen,
she,
you know?
She might, though.
I am the Queen.
Does the Queen say, I am the Queen or I am Queen? No, you're right. She would say the... But I feel maybe in different cultures, they might not use the pronouncement.
I don't know why I'm so hung up on this. It really doesn't matter.
It is weird. It's like a weird thing to have happen. If that happened to you and you became the Phoenix, I would question you about it.
But what, like, if why I are became you... the Queen?
That'd be a different story. But trust me, if you became the Phoenix, I would really be asking you a lot of questions about how you say your name and, like, why are you Phoenix and not the Phoenix?
I wouldn't be able to answer you. I'd just be passing out every second.
Or you would just push me to the side with your cosmic force.
Right.
So, like I said, Rogue has returned. She's been absent for two episodes, and she feels real guilty. As we discussed in a previous episode, if Rogue was there, she might have been able to pilot the space shuttle
yeah.
with her powers. We don't know, but Rogue certainly feels guilty about it.
Right.
And Gambit's like... It's not your fault, Cher. You were on a mission.
Right.
And but we never get to know what this mission was.
Maybe it was a boring one, you know?
I guess, but I don't know. We have seen the X-Men go off on solo missions, mainly Wolverine at times. So they are off doing these things apart from the group. But
yeah.
it is kind of... I just thought that... It just stuck out to me that she's on this mysterious mission that we'll never know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So Rogue's back, and... at this point, Wolverine sort of busts in and he announces that Professor X had a crazy thing where he saw the Juggernaut and Lalandra's come and he wants us to go there and help him. But this is where the X-Men kind of get divided a little bit. because Storm says she also spoke to Moira MacTaggert, and she and Moira's still convinced that despite Professor X saying that he loves Lilandra, that this is all an illusion. Mm-hmm. So Storm, Moira, and Gambit all think Professor X is crazy, whereas Wolverine and surprisingly Cyclops don't think the Professor's crazy. And there's like a it's like a weird division amongst the team members.
I don't know if they don't think he's crazy. I think it's just the division over what they think they should do about the situation.
Right, yeah. Because Storm kind of thinks the Professor just needs rest.
Yeah.
But Wolverine's like, I think we should check it out.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of this, you know, alien spaceship mumbo-jumbo, and we don't know what's going on.
To a certain extent, Storm is right, because the Professor says to them, I don't know if it was the end of the last episode or the beginning of this one, he says that he can't really be trusted. He knows that something weird is going on in his own psyche, and he tells them, don't listen to all my directions because I'm going to be saying crazy stuff for a while.
Yeah.
So Storm takes that to heart.
Yes.
And she's like, yeah, just because he's saying stuff doesn't mean that we should necessarily go all the way over there and believe.
I mean, yeah, it's a long flight across the Atlantic Ocean.
I mean,
You know, and Jean's in the hospital. She's recovering.
Right.
But anyway, Cyclops surprisingly agrees with Wolverine, which stuns Gambit. He's like, I don't believe my ears. And so Cyclops orders Wolverine.
You'll take any excuse, won't you?
Yeah. Well, Cyclops orders Wolverine, Rogue, Gambit, and Jubilee to go to Muir Island while Storm stays behind for some reason.
Storm and Cyclops. Right.
Storm and Cyclops. And Beast is doing experiments in his lab somewhere.
Right. So, okay, Beast has an excuse. It's weird to me that Storm, because Storm and Cyclops are the two leaders of the group. It's weird that the two leaders stay behind and everybody else goes off.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. And in the original comic, Storm is on this mission.
Yeah.
Although in the original comic, the premise is that Jean's been hospitalized, and the X-Men are forced to go on a vacation to Muir Island. Or not Muir Island, to Scotland, to Cassidy Keep. That's where Banshee lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Muir Island really comes into play in those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the vacation team is Wolverine, Banshee, Storm, Nightcrawler, and Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
So Storm is there. And her claustrophobia plays a big part in the fight they have with Juggernaut in the comic.
You know what? I do miss Nightcrawler.
I know. He would be so good on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame. I mean, he shows up in one of the greatest episodes that's yet to come.
We'll see him later.
Yeah.
But I do kind of wish he was a staple.
Yeah. You know, I fished my original Nightcrawler action figure.
Oh, I know.
Out of my parents' house when we visited last weekend.
I know all about it.
He's now sitting up on our fireplace with the Cyclops. Another toy rescued from my nephews who are enjoying all my old toys.
Rescued, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. They throw them around and stick them in their mouths and stuff.
Yep.
I was like, I'll save Nightcrawler. They're not going to miss him. Although, unfortunately, I discovered that as a kid, I remembered I ripped off Nightcrawler's rubber tail, which I felt really bad about now as an adult.
Oh, that's what prompted the rescuing, I see.
Well, I mean, that was my fault.
Feelings of intense guilt.
Yeah, maybe. So anyway, the X-Men blast off in their Blackbird to Muir Island. And then, you know, meanwhile, back in Scotland, Lilandra's captured, and our old friend Eric the Red arrives to collect Lilandra from Juggernaut and Black Tom. And Black Tom's trying to do some kind of negotiation. He's like, where's our money? You promised us a sum. Mm. Something like that. And Eric the Red just laughs at him, shoots him with his green laser. And at this point, there's like a great like direction of animation right now where you just see Juggernaut's silent, huge hand slowly go through the air and grab Eric the Red.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of holds him with one hand, crushing his rib cage. It shows you how massive Juggernaut is and how strong he is, and the crinkling of Eric the Red's bones is really disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, Eric the Red is forced to capitulate and pay Black Tom and Juggernaut a fee, which turns out to be $10 million, which has a lovely round sound with all those zeros. Wouldn't you agree? That's Black Tom's description of $10 million.
Yes, indeed.
And Black Tom, yes, I do agree. $10 million is still a delicious sum of money.
Yeah, that's aged well. Yeah.
$10 million, still not out of style in 2017. I love that cool, refreshing mint, as Juggernaut would refer to money in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another funny scene, too. When Black Tom's counting the money, Eric the Red's like, yes, yes, you have your meaningless money.
Yeah. Well, he's not from Earth. He doesn't care about money.
Yeah, but like, how does he get the 10 million?
Yeah, well.
Maybe he has one of those Star Trek replicators.
Yeah, maybe.
Or he just... I mean, Eric the Red has a massive interstellar spaceship and space station zombie goons. Maybe he just crashes into a bank somewhere and just loads up. Yeah, who knows? Mm-hmm. But he gets the money somehow. Meanwhile, though, the team arrives and they greet Banshee at Muir Island, and Wolverine and Banshee have some words as they meet for the first time. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's the first time we see Banshee in his classic green and yellow outfit from the comics, which is kind of cool. They didn't like change it in any way, so it's nice to see him. And Banshee and Wolverine do not get along at first at all.
Wolverine doesn't get along with anybody at first, really.
Yeah, Wolverine just hates any stranger. He's so unwelcoming and so nasty to people.
Yeah.
He immediately brandishes his claws to Banshee, and that dark electronic, pulse plays in the background when he does that. And they almost fight, but I don't know, it's broken
crisis up. Crisis averted.
Right, crisis averted. And then, meanwhile, like we said, they're counting their money at Cassidy Keep. It's this castle that, that belongs to Banshee, but I guess because Black Tom's his younger brother or cousin, whatever continuity you want to follow, I guess Black Tom has access to it as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, we see more of Lilandra, and you had some, funny comments about her costume here.
I don't remember it being because last time we saw her, she had emerged from her spaceship, so she was fully clothed in that bug helmet
and the space outfit
and the whole space outfit,
right?
But here, when we see her actual costume, I know it's pulled from the comics, so that is what it is, but it's a surprisingly scandalous outfit,
especially for a kid's cartoon.
I don't know, it's like fishnet stocking sort of things, and it's kind of just like a bathing suit
with her cleavage being partially shown,
right?
But there's a weird Spider-Man logo in the middle of it.
It's just a spider logo.
I don't think it's a spider. I don't know what it's supposed to represent.
I think it is supposed to be a bug of some kind.
Yeah, maybe.
And it's funny because we talked about all those other
aliens
that were bug people,
right?
And Juggernaut makes some allusion. He's like, "I'm gonna crush you like a bug," or something like that. He says to her, I don't know. There's some kind of weird...
They're not bugs. I think they're supposed to be birds. Maybe they eat bugs. How many birds eat bugs? A lot?
A lot, I think.
So maybe that's part of the Shi'ar diet.
Yeah, I don't know.
And, as far as her sexy outfit, I mean, Eric the Red has a freaky, BDSM outfit going on, too.
Yeah.
So it's not just the women who are wearing scandalous clothing.
I guess.
It's the Shi'ar men.
Yeah. Maybe they just need a lot of, mobility and, air ventilation.
I mean, it's just...
they're, fighting and stuff.
It's the classic Star Trek ripoff of space aliens dressing in ridiculous, sexy for women or barbarian outfit for men kind of thing going on.
Right.
So it's just a sci-fi trope. But meanwhile, that's kind of funny, though. I still don't understand the Spider-Man logo on her chest. Someone's going to have to explain that to us.
It's not Spider-Man, exactly.
It's not Spider-Man, but it looks like it.
Yeah.
If someone explains to me what that logo is that she's wearing, please, in the Facebook message group. But meanwhile, Wolverine... he confirms that the professor wasn't hallucinating. They go to the scene of the crime, and he smells the Juggernaut, and he, comments again on how much the Juggernaut smells and stinks, which I thought was funny.
Uh-huh.
We talked about in previous episodes how Wolverine's sense of smell might be a curse to him.
Yeah.
Because he's smelling really foul things all the time at, a magnification times a million.
Mm.
So, and he really hates the smell of Juggernaut, which makes you wonder, it's like, how much can the Juggernaut bathe?
Why?
Well, because he's this big, clumbering, magical,
I mean, he's
Hercules.
A giant, right?
But when he touches, things, it cracks and crumbles.
So
I can't imagine him getting in, a porcelain bathtub and
maybe
getting
just,
in a shower.
Maybe he just, stands in the backyard and gets, a hose down or something.
Yeah, but if that was the only way to bathe yourself, would you do it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I would want to be interested in being bathed, but he's an evil
villain.
Maybe
he jumps in a lake every day.
Maybe he's not aware of how he smells.
Maybe he doesn't smell that bad, but Wolverine, hates him, so he hates the smell.
And also that costume's really grafted onto his...
Yeah, but that's every superhero. We just talked about the spandex.
Yeah, but there's something, really extra... undexterous about Juggernaut.
Uh-huh.
His big, bulky fingers. I feel like, I don't know, if there's a zipper on that thing, it might be hard for him to reach and take off.
I don't know.
It's just, I can just imagine the Juggernaut being really big, sweaty, and smelly. So another funny insight from Wolverine's nose.
Mm.
But now we see Lilandra's special psychic powers.
Mm-hmm.
She reaches out to Professor X to let her know. They figure out the clues that they're in Cassidy Keep. And then there's like this ridiculous shot where to get to Cassidy Keep, instead of just taking the Blackbird plane...
Oh, yeah, they fly over. I thought that scene was really funny because Banshee is carrying Wolverine and screaming.
Yeah.
And, like, Wolverine has to plug his ears because of the screaming while they're flying. And then Rogue just takes Jubilee and Gambit by the hand and is, like, flying with them.
Yeah.
And it's, like, defying gravity because, like, neither of them are, like, drooping
at all
on the sides.
Well, it's the classic, remember Superman 1, where Christopher Reeves takes Lois Lane for flight.
Uh-huh.
And they hold hands, and she kind of, like, her body is not drooping either. She's, for some reason, able to splay her body out on the air.
Right.
Maybe they're riding on, like, an air current or something.
I don't know. It just looks very funny because...
they should be drooping by their hands.
Yeah, they should. Gravity should be acting on them, but it's not for some reason.
Well, maybe, like I said, maybe you fly at a certain speed, you can stretch your body out like that. It's almost like... It's like skydiving.
Except they're at low altitude, so it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I guess. You're right. Yeah, they're kind of like...
They're, like, skimming
above
over
the water.
Ocean.
Right, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's just, like, a funny shot.
Yeah.
You know, the X-Men, they blow their way into this Cassidy Keep place, and there's, like, Gambit starts throwing his cards everywhere, and Jubilee has one of the worst lines she'll ever say in this series.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed it. She says something like, "Way to deal him out of the game, Gambit!"
She's trying to pull Wolverine, but it didn't work.
But it's like she's almost like creating a catchphrase for another character that's doing something cool.
I guess. You know what is cool? I liked it when Jubilee joins the fight and she has her dumb fireworks powers that are like not that powerful, I guess.
I like how you describe them as dumb.
But what I really liked is that before she uses her like stream of fireworks, she puts those sunglasses on, and she always has this like big pink 80s sunglasses on her head.
Yeah.
And you think they're just a fashion choice, but when she put them on and starts shooting the fireworks, I was like, oh, that's actually a really practical choice for her.
I mean, they kind of like showed that in the first two episodes of the series, that when she uses her power, she puts the sunglasses on.
I never really thought about it before this time for some reason.
I mean, it's not consistent. And I mean, but the whole point of the glasses is that the fireworks are kind of blinding too.
Yeah.
So she needs to be able to see what she's doing. Yeah, good. Yeah, it's cool to see her with the sunglasses on.
Yeah.
It does make her cooler. I like those sunglasses. I love the 90s X-Men sunglass fashion choices. You cannot get them. It's hard to get them in stores now. I've told this before, but I've searched far and wide for the Cyclops 90s sunglasses.
I know.
Which are like big, sort of blocky.
Red glassed sunglasses.
Right, yeah. They're hard to explain.
Frameless.
Frameless?
Yeah.
Oh, right, because it's all like one big plastic piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool if those existed. Although, my favorite ones ever are the ones he had in the 60s comics, where they're kind of, I don't know, I guess they got like a green frame, but with the red lenses in them.
Mm.
They're like a little more turtle-shaped or whatever. I don't know if that's the right word. That's just the phrase my brain gave me at that moment. So they're fighting Juggernaut and Black Tom. Oh, and it's here we see, like we said, we talk about Black Tom and Banshee. They're fighting each other, and their powers don't work on each other, and they both mention it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another weird trope in the X-Men universe, that if characters are related, mutant powers have no effect on each other.
Right.
So that's like a very famous thing between Cyclops and Havoc. Havoc being Cyclops' younger brother.
But then shouldn't Professor X and Juggernaut not be able to...
Well, that's a little different because they're half-brothers, first of all. Uh-huh. Juggernaut's not a mutant. His powers are magical.
Yeah, but then Professor X's powers still shouldn't work on his half-brother because they share half of their genetics.
Maybe, but it's not true of every sibling relationship, though. It's just like a weird thing that's come up a few times.
Hmm.
I mean, the only examples I can think of right now are Banshee and Black Tom and Cyclops and Havoc. Maybe they're the only pairs.
Hmm.
Where they're like, you know, and we'll see in a later episode where the X-Factor appear, that Havoc and Cyclops get into a fight. And I think a similar thing happens, but they don't really talk about it. They're just kind of stunned when their powers do nothing to each other. It's kind of funny. And I always thought that was cool. I thought that was a nice little detail. Even though, again, physics makes no sense.
Yeah, well.
Okay. So at this moment, they've been fighting, and a new character emerges on the scene. He's flying from the deep recesses of space, and it's a cool little directorial moment. We just see his gloves, like, hurtling through the Earth's atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And it turns out to be this character named Gladiator. And he's, like, the best way to describe him is the Marvel equivalent of Superman in terms of powers. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of, like, what he represents. And he's a minor character in the Marvel world.
Yeah.
But he's got, like, the Superman powers of super strength. He could, you know, blow things really hard. And he has got laser eye beams.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've talked about in the creation of Gladiator, the original comic book creator said that they modeled him after Superman for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Okay.
But he's not a human. He's, like, a purple spaceman with a... like a
blue mohawk.
Yeah, like a Guardians of the Galaxy mohawk thing going on.
Yeah.
But he's not from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
Right. So anyway, Gladiator arrives. He also works for Emperor Deken. And unlike Eric the Red, who seems to be this real slime ball, they say that this Gladiator guy, he's the leader of the Emperor's Praetorian Guard, and he's a warrior with honor. So all he can do is just follow the Emperor's orders. He doesn't get political about stuff, even though he knows the difference between right and wrong. So mm-hmm. he's there to just collect the princess once and for all to tell her where the tell him where the Emkron crystal is.
Mm-hmm.
So Gladiator shows up. And one thing I have to mention, you know, I taped all these episodes from their original broadcast as a kid, and I can very distinctly tell the audience that the original voice actor of Gladiator, I don't know his name, was replaced in syndication at some point by a different voice actor.
Hmm.
And the new voice actor they got was way wimpier than the original guy, who I thought was way funnier and more over the top. And I have no idea why they replaced the voice actor.
Hmm.
I mean, I know they changed out the actress for Storm after the pilot and maybe a few episodes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they went back and re-recorded Storm's lines with the new actress. I think they might have done that. But I don't know why they did that with this minor character of Gladiator. It's kind of strange.
Interesting.
And it always bugged me whenever I saw repeats of this, because I'm like, that's not Gladiator's voice, and the acting is just way worse. So kind of a strange move on the Fox syndicators for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Gladiator, another interesting thing about him, Sonya, is that even though he's got the powers of Superman, it's like he gets his powers in a strange way. Like, you know, Superman gets his powers from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But Gladiator's strength comes from his own sense of confidence.
What?
Yeah. I knew you didn't know this. I was saving this to tell you. So whenever he's feeling really confident, he's incredibly strong uh-huh. and incredibly powerful. But whenever his confidence is questioned,
uh-huh.
whenever he doubts himself, he gets really weak.
It's just like real life.
Yeah, it's just all sort of. I mean, but in real life, your muscles don't get any less strong. In Gladiator's case, they do. And that's something I remember seeing that in an X-Men comic. I think one of the Grant Morrison ones. They've got this character named Cassandra Nova who is like the evil unborn twin sister Professor X, who emerges as a psychic entity of pure evil, and she has to fight Gladiator at one point, and she just ruins him psychologically, and therefore he's just, you know, she's able to just like kick him in the face or something, and he passes out.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's got the face, I mean, even though he's got the technical strength of like Superman. So interesting note on Gladiator. I don't know if we're gonna see that play out in these cartoons though. I don't think we see Gladiator's confidence come into play. Unless I'm wrong, it comes in a later episode or something. But anyway, so Gladiator arrives, and the first thing that happens is Juggernaut punches him in the stomach, and nothing happens. It's just a brick wall.
Yeah.
And Juggernaut is quite stunned, and then Gladiator just sort of picks Juggernaut up by the wrist and flicks him very daintily, and Juggernaut goes flying like a million miles away. And that's like a great line from...
Gambit, right?
Yeah, from Gambit, where Jubilee says something like, I've never seen anyone do that to the Juggernaut. And Gambit's like, nobody from Earth.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks off into the distance a little bit afraid, or I guess in awe.
Mm-hmm.
So Gladiator's got, like, titanic strength.
Right.
Which makes it all the more interesting when Jean Grey, the Phoenix, arrives and dispatches Gladiator.
Right. Well, Lilandra starts like sending out distress signals basically,
right.
Like because she's about to be kidnapped, and Jean like pops up in her hospital bed. She had been like, I don't know, not quite in a like, I don't know, she was kind of passed out or something.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
She's not
she, like,
full
pops
strength.
Up and she's like, I have to go right now. Yeah. And like flies out the window as the Phoenix.
Yeah, she blasts off like in an instant from New York City to Scotland.
Yeah.
And she arrives and she dispatches Gladiator. She picks him
easily.
Up in a fireball and like sends him like a billion miles in space.
Yeah.
Well, not a billion. She sends him, I guess she sends him towards the sun.
Uh-huh.
But when he disappears, it's like a sprinkling like twilight star.
Right.
You know, you hear like a ding in the background or
yeah.
something. So that just shows like the various power levels we're dealing with. Juggernaut, insanely strong. Power on, like, off the charts. But then Gladiator, like, magnified by a million over Juggernaut. And then Phoenix, a million times more powerful than Gladiator.
Right.
So pretty cool, like, levels of power we're dealing with. And that takes us right to the end of the episode where Phoenix, she saved the day. She saved Lilandra. And Lilandra asks some probing questions. She's like, you're the guardian of the crystal, aren't you? And Jean's like, I am. And they talk about how they have to keep the crystal safe from the mad Deken. And at this point, Jean realizes that Deken has opened up another wormhole by the sun.
Close to the sun, yeah.
And that's where Gladiator notices this too, and his spaceship arrives. He's here now on Earth
right.
to get Lilandra and the crystal. And he says, the crystal is here. I can feel its power. And he starts laughing. So,
that evil cackle.
Right. So this, you know, before we go here, this led to a question I had, both I'm going to ask you and to our audience here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the deal with this Emkron crystal?
It's all powerful, no?
I get, yeah, but like, why does this crystal exist? And why, and it's so strong that it needs its own cosmic guardian of it. It just seems like it's a bad idea that it's a physical thing that's out there.
Yeah.
And that they've trusted it to these space beings, the Shi'ar, which seem, on the surface, as petty and as stupid as humans.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Emperor is going to use it for pure evil.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems like a bad idea to have an object of pure destruction at the hands of a madman. Which, as I'm saying this out loud, makes me think of... Donald Trump having his fingers on the nuclear codes. It's like there's this thing out there in free society that if you rose to the power, you would also have your fingers on it. Why would we allow anyone to touch them?
Why indeed?
Yeah, so maybe a parallel there
right.
with this Phoenix saga.
I mean, there's your answer for you, right? There's no like why or why does it exist or who would make it.
It just came into being. And
it exists now, and now they have to deal with it.
Right, so we need some kind of Phoenix force to protect the world from... some lunatic launching the codes from the nuclear football somewhere.
Yes.
Hmm.
Does that mean that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is Phoenix?
I don't know about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It has to be a being from beyond the stars that merges with someone on Earth to save the day. all right, that might have been a bit of a tangent there. But another great episode. Like you said, I too am hungry for more.
Yes.
Any more thoughts on this episode on Lilandra, the Shi'ar, the X-Men?
I feel like we're a little overly obsessed with how all the characters look and dress, but...
That might be a fair criticism.
Lilandra and Deken both have these, like, markings mm-hmm. around their eyes. Are those tattoos, or are they born with that?
I have no idea.
They look cool.
Like it's part of their Shi'ar-ness.
Yeah, right.
It might be like sort of tribal cultural tattoos, or maybe it's like a mask.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what's going on with that. That's
okay.
A good question. But as far as, you know, being obsessed with the way they look, I wouldn't normally be obsessed with the way the characters look and make a point to mention their crazy outfits.
Uh-huh.
Part of the fun for me of doing this podcast is wanting to, like, pretend that... these are actors
uh-huh.
and not just, you know, cartoon characters being animated. Because,
uh-huh.
like I said many times, my dream is to one day have the X-Men come to life as a real show
right.
with real actors. And I know we have the movies, but... And that's a big thing in the movies, like, how do you costume them?
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, I like to imagine a world where you could costume them just like
in
the comics.
In bright spandex
and
all the crazy
right.
stuff.
So that's why I always think it's fun to talk about, just because by casting a spotlight on it and making it real, it lends to, like, the it puts you in the place where you'd be making those production design choices, maybe. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to see if, like, there is a way to make it work.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to be obsessed with.
No,
it.
I know.
I think it's, like, a really funny aspect of the right. whole thing.
Well, yeah, and I'm just describing all this because it's just occurred to me now that you brought it up. I was like, I think that's why
it's also our medium, you know, like, this is auditory only, so, right.
yeah.
you know,
that's
whatever.
True. Yeah, we have to describe things descriptively.
well said.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I have for this episode. A few other non X-Men animated series things. We didn't watch Gifted Episode 2. I don't know if I want to.
Really?
You want to see it?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I
want to
give them a chance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was just kind of, even though I didn't think the pilot was bad, I was just like kind of bored and unmotivated to carry on.
Yeah.
So, but if you want to watch it, you're going to have to make that happen.
Okay.
You're going to be responsible for us having seen it.
I can handle my own viewing arrangements.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so Gifted, we didn't see episode 2. You know, but maybe we'll catch up as Sonya is promising here.
Yeah. Well, maybe you guys out there can let us know if it's worth it or not worth it without giving away too much.
And I did something without you. It was mentioned on the Facebook group. I watched the trailer for the New Mutants movie. The New Mutants, if you don't know, it's based on like an 80s comic where it was about like a next generation of mutants that were younger and they were going to be the next generation of X-Men and they had their own adventures, like the teenage X-Men of the 80s. Now, in this trailer, you know, I don't know what to think about it. It's like they instead of it being just the New Mutants and, you know, I don't know if they're, I forget what the story is with the New Mutants. I had one comic as a kid I got of theirs, and I forget if they're under the tutelage of Professor X or not. I don't know. They might have been under the tutelage of Magneto at the time, who was in charge of the X Mansion because Professor X was missing. I don't know. Someone can fill us in on the details in the Facebook group. But in this thing, they show it as like they're all sort of captured by some evil experimenting team of like weird, you know, scientists, and they're doing crazy experiments on them, and it turns out that it looks like something is loose in this evil science fortress. A character describes it as a haunted house, because there's a whole bunch of really scary horror stuff happening. Like, it's not presented as a straight-ahead comic book movie. It's presented as like a scary horror thriller. You know, so there's like weird people in clown masks and like people pushing like solid walls with their hands and making them stretchy and elastic in that scary way.
Mm-hmm.
And like medical experiments going on with people being strapped onto gurneys and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And all the young mutants trying to escape this place, and they're screaming and, you know, quick flash jump editing, you know, scare jumps and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I don't like the horror genre that much.
I don't either. So far, from what you've said, I'm not interested.
Yeah, and I said that on the Facebook group. I said, I don't think Sonya's going to watch it. I mean, but I mean, I will see it. If I don't see it in the theaters, I will see it on video. I mean, I'm going to be curious to want to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then who knows? I mean, if it comes out and people are like, oh, it's like fucking great, you know, then like maybe I might be compelled to go see it. Because it is cool. I mean, the one thing you got to praise Fox for is that in the wake of Deadpool and Logan, they've been taking enormous risks with their comic book franchises.
Mm.
They're not just telling the straight-up comic book stories. Now they're doing something new and different.
Mm-hmm.
And they're breaking new ground in the process, which is pretty fun.
That's good.
They're shaking up the genre.
Mm-hmm.
So this looks like another attempt to do that. They're doing, like, instead of a comic book movie, they're doing a horror film with Marvel characters.
Right.
Which is, like, that's a good idea. The trailer, though, didn't look too great. I mean, it wasn't that scary, and it just looked like there's nothing. I couldn't get a sense of what was going on, and I don't know. Maybe, but it might be good.
Hmm.
I noticed one of the actors from Stranger Things was in it, which is kind of cool. I like that show.
Yeah.
Oh, and before I forget, make sure to download and subscribe to the latest episode of Get to the Good Part podcast.
I heard they have an extra cool guest star on that show.
You don't say.
This time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the podcast where they analyze the book Ready Player One, which is soon to be the Steven Spielberg movie that's coming out next year. It's a really awesome sci-fi fantasy novel about like a post-apocalyptic kind of world where there's this enormous video game contest to win a ton of money and a whole bunch of weird video game and pop culture-y things happen.
Yeah, a lot of 80s culture references, too. Right. And it's a really fun book, and the podcast is also really fun. They go through it chapter by chapter.
Right.
So similar to this podcast in format.
Right.
And unfortunately, we read the book before knowing about the podcast, but I bet it's fun to go through and like read the book along with
yes,
them.
Yes, definitely.
Like,
yeah,
at their pace.
They do their best not to have spoilers. We had a guest of that, the host of that show on one of our episodes, on the Mojo Vision episode. His name is Ryan Wilson, and he was really nice, and that was a great episode we had, and we talked more about it. But the episode I was on, it was released this past week. It was chapter 14 of the book, so I would say check it out. It's a lot of fun.
And they're planning to do more books in the future, I believe, right? After
Those guys?
Yeah.
I don't know what their plans are, really. I think they're going to definitely, when the movie comes out, they're going to segue to some kind of movie analysis.
Oh,
I think
okay.
They're going to keep it mostly Ready Player One, but who knows? Maybe they will do more books in the future.
Oh.
But they're a great group of guys.
A grape group.
Yeah, so check out Get to the Good Part, chapter 14, and I'm on the latest episode.
Cool.
All right, so that's all I have for this episode. I want to remind everybody to join our Facebook group, X-Men Task Podcast. Mm-hmm. Just search us out on Facebook. Join the group. Talk with us.
Talk with each other.
Yeah.
Lots of smart people in there.
Correct all the
cool
mistakes we made.
Say.
Yeah.
That too.
Also, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Also follow X-Men TAS on Twitter. They're at X-Men TAS. Eric and Julia Leewald run that, the X-Men writers and executive producers from the series that we all know and love. We always like to give them a shout out. Also remember to rate and review us on your various podcast apps that you use. I guess most specifically iTunes helps us the most. Rate us 5 stars, leave a review. It goes a long way to increasing our exposure to get our show out to as many fans as possible. Sonia, do you have any final words to say as we are hurtling towards the conclusion of Phoenix Month?
Nope, I got my shillelagh ready.
All right. On that note, good night, everybody.